Okay, so what line are we at?
I don't know. Start at the top.
Yeah, good question.
Okay, so we riffing on Libra. Did we do the famous novel on Dallas and the Kennedy assassination? I don't know. Dearly, one mind at a time. I know we did that sentence. Remember? His book. Yeah, he's analyzing the shaman's book.
Right.
Yeah, let's start with that Libra. Quote. So Don DeLillo said, he's a famous novelist who did a very different kind of version of the Kennedy assassination in a novel called Libra. He says the assassination left an emptiness that made everything plausible, made us susceptible to the most incredible ideas and fantasies, Don DeLillo told a BBC interviewer. Riffing on Libra, his novel about those 6 seconds in Dallas, he said, quote, we couldn't seem to find out what happened, even on the most basic level. Now, what's interesting, Coker calls the Kennedy assassination as the first postmodern event, because in a post-information society, no one can ever find out anything. And that's what he's expressing here. We couldn't seem to find out what happened, even on the most basic level. How many gunmen? How many shots? How many wounds in the president's body? There was no coherent reality we could analyze and study. So we became a little paranoid. We developed a sense of the secret manipulation of history. Now that's Tetra management over in the LaRouche quadrant, the LaRouche version of Tetra management, right? So it began with top-down manipulation with the baby boomers, but by the millennials, it's a McLuhan sophistication understanding of the manipulation of history. You know, it's ecological, cybernetic equilibrium. DeLillo doesn't get that. Documents lost or destroyed. Official records sealed for 50 years. A number of very suspicious murders and suicides. Since Dallas, we see conspiracy everywhere. Now, do you see? You're beginning to see media management. But it's seen through literate baby boomers as top-down bureaucratic control, information control, and dealing with lies and truth, literate facts or literate medium. And McLuhan shows up at that very time in 64. I have an interview with him. So early 64, he says, LBJ took over. He said, it's not a conspiracy. So a lot of people were saying it was a conspiracy, and it was. But McLuhan was pointing out that there was a multi-level, many environments, and the reason LBJ became president is he was from the South, and the South resonated with the electric world, like the blues, he said, which was becoming popular in 64 among the college students. And so the Southern atmosphere was taking over in the ancient quarrel between the literate North and the semi-literate South, or the kinetic South. So McLuhan comes in, and we don't know that we think he's naive. Well, I knew better, but people thought if they got into the Kennedy assassination, that they thought, well, McLuhan's very naive and apolitical and all this. And then we find this interview after he died in the big corporate magazine for Hydro Montreal or something. And he's there talking about the Kennedy assassination very practically and why they were killed. He said the establishment killed them. He didn't go with the lone nut theory. So McLuhan was a closet conspiracy or the LaRouchean quadrant. But he, as a media called us, he wasn't going to bring that up. People had to realize the other factor that the elite, the digerati, that Catherine Fitz complains about, are allowed to lie to people. It actually says that. And when you join the CIA, well, the National Security Act of 1947 says that certain people in the intelligence agencies are some kind of a security for the government. They're allowed to lie to Americans. Okay, so.
Right, yeah. That has to be legal for them to do it routinely, right?
Would you say redo?
It's got to be somewhat legal. They have to have a sort
legal,
of
yeah.
formalize the process of doing it all the time. So
and that made
like
them arrogant. Rogue. And they did. They went rogue. They created a breakaway mini state. McLuhan would call them. Rock and roll was a mini state.
And that's not one of the Ten Commandments either.
No.
Thou shalt not lie. It's not, it only comes in if you're sleeping with your neighbor's wife.
Yeah.
Then maybe you should lie.
But
or fuck standing up.
Media ecology came in with the National Security Act. You know, primitive media ecology in 47. But because humans are nutty and they're Americans, which are big egomaniacs, they took advantage of that and became their own rogue mini-state. They took advantage that they could do anything and never and would be protected. So let's see if QAnon recognizes that and Mark doesn't. So Mark is quoting DeLillo on a postmodern situation. I don't know if Derry would call it that, but that you can't get information. Don't even know if he really was killed. Trump, our first conspiracist president. Now, based on what we said, or I said a couple hours ago, Trump is a literalist. He's old-fashioned. He's visual kinetic. And he's going to bring in the top-down document, the Declaration of Independence and the rights for Americans. And that is considered a conspiracist. Now, media-wise, it's correct to call him a conspiracist because print brought in conspiracy. As McLuhan said, it allowed the central banks to manipulate national economies. So there always was, with the vertical hierarchy aspect of the print environment, what it was called later the organization man, they would conspire against the locals because they managed this big environment that the locals didn't see. They didn't see the visual space. So Trump, he's a conspiracist president on a knee-jerk category level, but he's retrieving the all-American values. Remember, the myth about Americans are individualists and they don't trust government. They don't trust big stuff, right? You're on your own. Trump, our first conspiracist president, sailed into office on a wave of conspiracist bilge. Well, how do you know? You know? There's lots of evidence for conspiracies all over the place, enough to warrant it should go to court, but the conspiracy doesn't let them go to court. Tellingly, JFK was the ghost at the Burger King buffet of the Trump presidency. That's when he ordered all the burgers, right, for whoever was there. JFK was the ghost at the Burger King buffet of the Trump presidency, materializing during the 2016 campaign when Trump insinuated, citing a patently fabricated story to inquire. Now, Trump, he has to deal with the post-information environment, you know, 40, 50 years after the Kennedy assassination. So you cite anything. It's all fake. Citing a patently...
There was a report.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it was in the Inquirer and is basically a joke.
When you're a kinetic guy and you're on the move and you're building empires around the world, you can't sit around working with the facts or figuring out what is facts. Remember Reagan? Zappa quoted on Broadway the Hard Way, Reagan saying, "Facts are stupid things." He said something like that. Facts are stupid things.
Nice. Yeah, that's kind of similar to information is not knowledge.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That's
facts
right.
Facts are stupid things.
Yeah, that's Zappa's great poem on his McLuhan-esque poem. But so Reagan is the first virtual president, the simulated android meme president, or an obvious one. McLuhan in 72 had this great definition, the automated presidential surrogate. In other words, McLuhan would say in the forces thing, we're run by committees. That's national security committees, not by presidents. So he's an automated presidential surrogate, is a superlative nobody. Has to have a perfect life that he wears on his sleeve. People no longer could accept politics as a corrupt zone and accept the corruption in the private world of politics. Because it was televised, it had to have a collective veneer of integrity, so everybody started having politically correct opinions. And you had to be that if you were president. So... the ghost at the Burger King buffet, yes?
I was just thinking regarding what you were saying earlier about Trump's the sort of conspiracy side of things being a kind of an American archetype or a media a print artifact that way. Like it's an archetypal posture or you know, way of knowing that that comes from the medium. There's a frequent way of making it, describing it in terms of psychological satisfactions, you know, that like we know why people are so addicted to these misinformations, because it gives them the psychological thrill of thinking that they learned something that most people don't know, and now they have a leg up on people or whatever. But
yeah, that's
actually
the individualist version of the information society. You know, I know something the others don't know.
Yeah, there's a collective media psychology thing to that as well. It reminds me of this passage from Understanding Media, this brief passage in the chapter on the newspaper, the press, it says. Where McLuhan says, both book and newspaper are confessional in character, creating the effect of inside story by their mere form, regardless of content.
Yeah.
The book page yields the inside story of the author's mental adventures, so the press page yields the inside story of the community in action and interaction.
Right.
It is this reason that the press seems to be performing its function most when revealing the seamy side.
The scandals. Yes. They go along with no scandals. It's very dull being a journalist. And luckily they find one, and then they nowadays they get movies and books and all kinds of shit. But back before that, it revitalized the meaning of journalism. Their purpose was to save us from criminality, lethal behavior.
Yeah, and just to expose it, to like, you know, to launder it. The sunlight is the best disinfectant or something. But it really shows, it's another example of these things, this pattern where McLuhan provides excuses. Because it's like, it's always framed as a kind of a, you know, it's at least something to look down on, if not an actual moral failing, that people allow themselves to kind of indulge becoming addicted to this cognitive thrill of learning about the secrets and the conspiracies, and that, you know, people will put up with trashy, not, you know, no good facts as long as they deliver that thrill. It's looked down on as this individual psychological thing, but no, it's actually a collective psychological thing, and it's not because we're shitty or stupid or love error so much. It's because of the form of the medium, as McLuhan is explaining.
You have this
built on the newspaper, and it's like the default setting of the newspaper. Like you're saying, when the newspaper feels like it's doing what it's supposed to do the best is when it has
a big scandal.
Conspiracy.
Yeah. So he talks very technically there, but an immature reader might think he's doing the conspiracy, looking down on somebody that you were saying. But McLuhan doesn't make a judgment. And so he's talking about conspiracies, but explaining the other forces, the bottom-up forces of media environments that make a conspiracy not that simple, or not that if you expose it, you might not know, you don't come to an ending. You don't find out who's guilty, or if you find out someone's guilty,
it
might be framed. So McLuhan operated from Finnegan's Wake. It was a post-information environment. He was the first guy to realize that, and who remained in the public. Maybe some people realized it, and they just dropped out and became yoga teachers or something. You know, they moved out, mail or taco. They all left New York and moved out to small towns after the 60s. So McLuhan remained in the pattern recognition battles. He didn't give up. Well, he had to have others do it for him, like Barry Nevitt, but, you know, he showed up for the meetings to discuss what would go in the book. That's in the 70s. So what were you saying? Restate what you were saying there in simple terms.
Just that, you know, Mark Derry is hitting this very familiar territory. I mean, maybe he's bringing something novel to it with, like, just a descriptive skill, but it's not a new point, this idea that people have, you know, they indulge this psychological conspiracism thing, and it's a pretty cliched explanation for what the appeal is.
Yeah.
Right? And where they, you know, at least he is, by with that DeLillo quote, you know, he's also nodding to the fact that the facts often, you know, lead one, like, well, what do you want us to think? There's all these questions that don't have answers, and it looks fishy as hell. So, like, it's not that I wanted to think this is a conspiracy, it's that it fucking looks like it.
Yeah, that's it. That's his urban sophistication by quoting DeLillo against the Rube.
Yeah, but
he
doesn't resolve it. He doesn't resolve it. He just sort of lets it be kind of assumed that whereas intelligent adults like DeLillo got their brains going in a conspiratorial direction on JFK because there were good reasons to. People like this nutbag QAnon shaman guy, they get their brains going on those gears when there's no good reason to. When instead of it being, instead of the list of puzzling evidence being like how DeLillo listed all those things wrong with JFK, instead, you know, Derry presents it as being like some fantasy about, I don't know, you know, JFK Jr. is not dead, and there's like whatever the silly Ted Cruz thing was. You know, so he's like, he's trying to present it as being, this isn't your grandpa's respectable conspiracy theory, right?
Right.
But he doesn't really get into any of the, you know, he's not gonna, cause he's just not inclined, he's biased against, he doesn't want to be generous. You could be generous, you could say that, like, well, yeah, I mean, you got a feel for people who have just learned about, like, the Jimmy Savile scandal and are wondering if something similar should be happening in Washington, D.C., right?
Right.
You know, you could be generous, but, and referring to facts, but, you know, you could also just not be generous and not referring to facts. So, Derry is doing that ungenerous thing where he's trying to, make it about, it's not that there's a lot of public evidence, it's not that there's a lot of unanswered questions, and people like the QAnon shaman are victims of what I call unanswered question syndrome, which is a major thing, you know, that you can get, if there's a major question that hasn't been answered, and your brain needs some kind of an answer, yeah, you could be susceptible to seizing on the wrong answer and going a little bit crazy from that, but that's not your fault. That's the fault of the people who didn't answer the question in the first place, right? So I try to reframe it as people are victims of unanswered question syndrome. But so Derry's framing is that it's not so much that he's a victim of unanswered question syndrome as he is a victim of his own mental lack of discipline and indulging these sort of sexy sci-fi realities he would prefer to live in. And so the idea is it's a cliched movement to just try to put all the blame on the people who are suffering from unanswered question syndrome and make it a moral failing or a psychological failing. And I'm just reframing it like, no, this is one of those things where there's a big media bias content to that psychological thing. It's not an individual psychology thing, and it's not because humans are stupid. It's to a large extent because humans are, you know, full of newspapers. Because we're full of our whole culture here in North America is the newspaper is a very important central archetype, and the idea of exposing the seamy side of the powerful is one of the, like, you know, it's central to the national identity. It's not just some marginal thing, and that comes from that has a structural relationship to the media, as Clinton was describing there with the newspaper. So they have an excuse.
Okay, so I wanted to add this. Now this is just almost a year later. This was written in November, but it's about early spring last year. It's almost a year ago. Now the shaman is the majority opinion. More and more Americans supposedly are pissed off because they see the conspiracy. So in the end, the shaman is more right than Derry. there are all kinds of conspiracies from Fauci over to the Hillary stuff that's coming out, the Russian hoax stuff.
For sure. I mean, it was never a tenable position to try to claim that conspiracies belong to the past, and we don't do
right.
that anymore.
Right.
And it's, you know,
yeah,
it was never that position. That, like, trying to claim that was always more trying to dismiss the idea that there would be significant conspiracies going on right now and things we're not being told. That position has always had a lot more of a sort of a psychologically desperate ground to it than believing in conspiracies. Like, that's kind of a projection thing too. That, like, as if there's no, as if you don't have a giant psychological motivation to poo-poo conspiracies and believe that the face value world is relatively trustworthy.
Right.
Yeah, there's a big psychological need for that.
In the kinetic working class world, they're always saying, the Kennedy assassination, that obviously was a conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. They're always talking this way about management, higher management. So Trump is in that world, hanging out with a working kinetic bias, and so he might, it looks like Obama was born in Indonesia or something, you know? the sophisticated media ecology guys made fun of Trump. And in 2012 or so, he was at a reporter White House dinner, and Obama mocked Trump in the audience because he'd been, what is it they were called, birther? Toronto, the birther movement, that his birth certificate
was
wrong.
Yeah, but he wasn't really born in the U.S.
Yeah. But that's the class warfare. The elites, media managers, who understand the lie as art form, they know you don't take facts seriously. Problem with Trump is he took facts, or what media were saying on his level, seriously, the National Enquirer article. So it says JFK was the, tellingly, JFK was the ghost at the Burger King buffet of the Trump presidency, materializing during the 2016 campaign when Trump insinuated, citing a patently fabricated story in the National Enquirer, that his rival Ted Cruz's father was with Oswald shortly before he killed Kennedy and that somehow involved in the assassination. So Trump realized that most people on the provincial level believe the National Enquirer more and more than 30 years before, because nobody can tell what's real. So you can pick up a National Enquirer when you're at the market, and it's something to read. So Trump knows, so he's appealing to his base to say that Ted Cruz was involved with Kennedy assassination, or his father. And Mark is missing the populist levels of media engagement that's going on. And as maybe a media ecologist, he never liked McLuhan, as far as I know. He put down McLuhan, called him a racist at the 1998 Land Strait Symposium.
Right.
He doesn't recognize what the class world of post-information society, the different levels. You know, the elites in the cities, they don't believe that information has any staying power, so they manage the environments or the images of the environments. Trump is on the rural side, where they talk about anything that's happening. That the National Enquirer, a good magazine, they've proven this or that occasionally. To say fake news is to forget that it's a post-information society and demand real news or real information. So that's where Trump is not a full-blown, sophisticated McLuhanite or a Croakerite. So anyways, in 2017, a year into Trump's presidency, he threw the conspiracists in his base a bone by ordering the National Archives to release documents related to the JFK assassination. That is fucking stupid. We're supposed to get them released, and, 2039 or something, but Oliver Stone's movie forced it to be moved up to, a lot of it got released in 92 or so. And
as if only conspiracists are interested to see such things.
Yeah.
You know?
And
we don't need to just keep it secret, you know. Like,
yeah, we don't need to know that.
Why would you release it unless you're sort of trying to pander to children or something? The whole tone of that is a bit, yeah.
And Trump is a radical president, a liberating president. He is the first president to allow the stuff to be released. I mean, I don't know when it was released in 92, who was forced, Clinton or Bush or somebody. They were forced to, but there's no legal forcing. Well, no, there is a date. So Trump, but Trump is having no problem. But then he did back off at the last minute. And he wouldn't put out stuff. And then he told his friend, Napolitano, that who was shocked that he was suppressing something. He said, look, I've looked at it. If you saw what I saw, you would not release it to the public. So we don't know what that's about. The dark journalist thinks it's about aliens and stuff and the aerospace industry. So anyways, it's not what kosher to be criticizing Trump or ordering the National Archives to be released. And then he says, Trump is out of office, but Trumpism marches on. That's because Trumpism is the environmental effects of world of 2.0. And everybody is now their own god, isolated broadcaster, and regards every other information pattern or source as the enemy. It's Trumpism is a product of the Android meme and the tech body. So Trumpism marches on, and with it the conspiratorial obsession with the shots that ended Kamala. Once everybody could Google all kinds of information, they found out that there was lots of interesting historical, factual, pretty factual stuff that contradicted the myths in the mainstream media, like this UFO guy we played last night, UFO expert. You go back and look at it, it was taken seriously in the early 50s, and there's all kinds of other evidence showing that you can't just say it's bullshit. There's so much stuff in the Freedom of Information files to show that the UFO, pro-UFOs exist, it's 50-50. So Trumpism marches on, and more people are reading all kinds of different sources of information, getting different patterns. And why watch the news? They're going to give you a simple, watered-down, nothing pattern where you can get all kinds of stuff and stimulate your mind or get energized by looking at all the other kinds of patterns you can come up with. So that's entertainment. The mind is art form. So Trumpism marches on, and with it the conspiratorial obsession with the shots that ended Camelot. And with it the conspiratorial obsession with the shots that ended Camelot. On November 2nd, now a lot of stuff came out of what Trump released. I've seen a couple of books. I have them and read them, the ones that show what got released. Incredible stuff. I don't know, maybe Oswald's CIA number. It's right there, a member of the CIA, an employee. That might have been released in 92, I can't remember, but stuff like that. More incredible information. So, Mae Russell would like Trump. On November 2nd, QAnon.
I was just going to say that one of the things that we learned that was that the mayor of Dallas was working with the CIA.
Yeah, and his brother was the
pretty
second
remarkable
in charge of the CIA.
That's something.
Yeah. On November 2nd, that mayor, he went on to become a member of Congress. Respectable politician, you know, on a national level.
Boy. Yeah.
On November 2nd, QAnon cultists gathered in Dealey Plaza to await the second coming of JFK Jr., whose death in 1999 is no impediment in their minds to him becoming Trump's running mate in 2024 when the orange one has another go at the presidency. When you saw the demonstration on January 6th, on the other side, the peaceful side of the Capitol building, millions of people there, or a million or something, singing hymns and all that stuff, what, 5% would be take the JFK returning seriously? You can't say that that's a majority, the QAnon cultists, in those people who thought there was something fucked up going on with Trump in the election.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Yeah, there's all these grandmothers. I don't know what they knew or what they thought, but they thought they got to support Trump for some reason. And there were millions of them. Well, a million, apparently. It was a huge audience. The only documentaries show you that was on the other side, that the rioting was on the other side of the building. And the people in the big demonstrate or prayer gathering, they didn't even know anything happened on the other side. And some of them got arrested who were on the other, on the peaceful side. And they're still in jail. What?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it, being in jail is bad enough, but like, or just, you know, people lost their jobs just for going there at all, whether or not they did anything bad, whether or not they were on the peaceful side, which is, you know, outrageous. It's easy for people to just overlook how outrageous that is because they're not their people. Like, you know, I disagree with those people anyway, and they had bad views about the election, so fuck them. Like, let them lose their job for going to a protest. That's fine.
Yeah, so this article was written to, what'd you say, last words?
Just, it's terrible. No, these people have no moral high ground at all if they aren't protesting that.
And this article was written too early, and it's almost like he didn't research the other stuff that came out. He didn't know about it. You know, the what happened really on January 6th for the majority of people. So it's almost like he had to, you want to hit this guy, bring out Mark Derry. He's a hitman. He'll do something. He'll make a reasonably looking article, but actually if you look at it in depth, it's weak. So a couple of people think that JFK Jr. is going to run with Trump in 2024 when the orange one has another go at the presidency. Okay, so then it says, a 2021 report by the Pew Research Center. In 1958, about three-quarters of Americans trusted the federal government to do the right thing almost always or most of the time, notes a 2021 report by the Pew Research Center. Quote, since 2007, the share saying they can trust the government always or most of the time has not surpassed 30%. But if it was the gravitational pull of the assassination of JFK, not to mention the murders of RFK, Malcolm X, MN, and Martin Luther King, and Vietnam and Watergate, that caused their confidence in official explanations to collapse into an epistemological black hole, if it was the gravitational pull of the assassination of JFK, it's the right's weaponization of that uncertainty that spread the virus of conspiracism. That's an interesting idea. The weaponization of the uncertainty, the general anxiety in American life in relation to the government that spread the virus of conspiracism. So what's he missing there, Clinton, if you're still awake? The right weaponization. Now, that's what you saw in 2014. Clinton might be asleep. Where's Clinton?
Possibly.
And where's Greg? What do we got here? Holy shit, there's all kinds of people. Well, they're all listening to here. So that's why they're here. So Greg is here. We're going to come to these people. Give them a chance to talk at some point coming up. So it's the right...
Yeah, weaponization. I mean, yeah, he's trying to make that word do a lot of work here.
Yeah.
Basically, it's like weaponization is like that. Maybe people don't necessarily have like a very clear idea of what that means in this context, but it sort of conveys the idea that of just taking something that could be useful and turning it into something bad.
Yeah.
You know, like with that, you have a hostile intent. You're no longer playing with, a sincere intent. And I mean, yeah, sure, politicians don't play with sincere intent.
It's the right's weaponization of that uncertainty that spread the virus of conspiracism. The bottom-up effect of Trump as an environment is in here. By the election, they knew it was a Russian hoax, right? Or did that come out When did they tried to impeach him in January or so, February, but had the hoax been revealed before the election? I think so, but I can't remember. Did that help?
The hoax of...
The Russian hoax.
Which?
The Russian hoax.
Oh.
I think they still believe in it, don't they?
Yes and no.
Oh, yeah. They still believe in it, but when...
Like, it'll never be revealed, because people will always resist its revealing.
Right, but what... There were some things that happened... Well, Mueller failed. What else happened in 2020 before the election that... Yeah, Nunes and Jordan. Yes, but they got some satisfaction before the election, Carolyn? Well, you wouldn't know the timing of it. Before. So, you know, Trump got the advantage of the Russian hoax being shown to be a hoax. I think that was before the election. So then that makes people pissed off. It's interesting. I can't place the timing. Maybe that's why they had to impeach Trump to balance the exposure of the hoax part 2 months earlier.
What did he get impeached for?
We don't know. He got impeached for saying sloppy, for failing to be a media ecologist.
Was it the Ukraine thing?
Yeah, maybe that was it. The phone call. Then there was a phone call to the Georgia guy. The Georgia politician or governor. There were several phone calls. And he got impeached twice, didn't he?
Well, I don't know about that.
This is interesting that Greg doesn't know. These are major facts of history, Greg.
Yeah, I know, but...
Trump and Trump
so
look this up.
They're so ridiculous and inconsequential that it's...
I know. That's what you're getting fooled by the inconsequentialness of it all. Let's see. Trump.
Oh yeah, he was impeached. Yeah, Bob, he was impeached twice.
Yeah. Greg just finding out. What are the dates, Greg? Could you see?
Trump had been impeached for the second time by the House of Representatives on January 13th, 2021.
Yeah, after he was out of office, almost, you know, it was over. They still wanted to get him.
Yeah,
but when's the previous one? It's in 2020.
I can't find it. I mean, I can't even find it on impeachment Donald Trump. I can't even find it.
It's such a nothing burger.
Articles of impeachment. Donald Trump resolved on his impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors.
When, like in the summer, in August or something?
It looks like the second one is
that
about
was January 13th.
Something about the counting of the votes and all that. And basically, he got impeached because he didn't have a peaceful transfer of power, right?
Right, and maybe because of the riot, January 6th, so-called riot. Okay, I'm going to put Trump impeachment in and get the date.
Well, here it is. Here it is. First impeachment of Donald Trump. He had solicited foreign interference in the 2020 U.S. presidential election to help the re-election bid, and then obstructed the inquiry itself by telling his administration officials to ignore subpoenas for documents and testimony. The inquiry reported that Trump withheld military aid and an invitation to the White House to Ukrainian President Zelensky. It's all about Ukraine.
Yes, but what date is that? Because he beat it.
The Senate acquitted Trump of these charges on the 5th of February, 2020.
Okay, a year earlier. Okay, what's funny, Greg is super informed. He missed the impeachments of Trump. That's pretty good, Greg. I wonder what was keeping you distracted. Did you get vaccination shots? COVID distracted you or something?
Maybe.
Okay.
Not before that.
Okay, so.
I guess it's just so silly. And the people involved are Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler and Nancy Pelosi. I mean, I can't be bothered with people like that.
Yeah, you can't take anything they do seriously. That's why you missed it.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. you thought they didn't even weren't even able to pull off a proper impeachment ceremony. You thought they these people aren't going to accomplish it. They didn't do it. They couldn't get it done. What you probably thought. So the rights and weaponization of that uncertainty that spread the virus. Well, it's not just the right. That's a misnomer too. There were people who weren't right who were into the Trump conspiracies. They were apolitical, maybe. So then it says Newt Gingrich. Okay, so you only have a little bit. Oh no, we got more. Newt Gingrich, the Republican Speaker of the House, whose declared goal was, quote, reshaping the entire nation through the news media. Oh, there's mediaecology. Pioneered. Okay, when was his declared goal? In 95, when he took over? Gingrich first mastered the media and then rose to be king of the hill. It's a 1994 article. Okay, so he declared this way back then. His goal was reshaping the entire nation through the news media. Okay, that's a mediaecologist for top-down, back to kinetic space of the Constitution reasons. That's mixing modalities there. See, that's Quadrophenia. Pioneered the tactic of demonizing and discrediting the liberal media elite as well as the very Congress he served in. Anything, in fact, that stood in the way of the pugnacious right-wing populism he epitomized. Fox News turned his kill-the-messenger strategy into a mega-profitable outrage machine. Trump, yeah, because, you know, Fox comes in 96 or so, a year or so after Newt starts it. Trump transformed Fox's red meat demagoguery into a wrecking ball assault on the regime of truth, as the philosopher Michel Foucault called it. Okay, no, a lot of us found out to be non-attack on truth. The problem is they're all inside a post-information society environment. So I wish Brian should speak up. I wish Clint was here to back up what I'm saying. He knows this stuff a little bit, but it's up to you, Brian. Greg doesn't get this. The dominant discourses and adjudicating bodies, so the regime of truth is the dominant discourses and adjudicating bodies that determine what in a given society is true or false. Trump's insistence that we're entitled not just to our own opinions but to our own facts is now an article of faith on the right. Well, there is hyper-subjectivity in Web 2.0 that comes with it. And there's hard to tell what's a fact and what isn't. Maybe 30 years ago, nobody believed that Darwinism would be questioned, but it is by people who have all kinds of other views on it or criticisms of it.